Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello. Welcome to another Tech Talk. It's me, Stephen Scott, back with you here once again for the next hour with my chums as we talk tech. Good to have your company. Thank you so much for tuning in. I know the world is just crazy at the moment. Hopefully we can take your mind off it all by talking some nonsense for an hour and hopefully some sense as well. Let me bring in Robin Christofferson, who, what on earth is going on with you?
Honestly, it feels like the world's ending. So I have got some major work going on out. I have no idea what's going on. It sounds like they're crunching up cars or trees or something. And it kind of comes and goes. So apologies, guys. Let's lean into it. Let's just enjoy the ambience.
Yeah, we've got a new sound with the show, which is lovely. Andy, anything going on outside your flat?
I can't see. I'm on the third floor of a flat. I can see, actually, the neighbours have a roof terrace. So when they're up there, I can see them on the roof terrace up there.
Okay, now, okay, this is moving a family on show. Let's leave it there.
I can't get on my roof. I'd fall off.
Yeah, I wouldn't advise any of us getting on any roofs anytime
Hello
soon.
To you both, by the way.
Anyways. Hello.
Oh, yeah.
Roof or roof? Roofs? Roofs?
Roofs?
Roofs.
Roofs. Okay, right, moving on. How do you fancy, Robin, getting rid of that guide dog of yours? You know, that lovely dog. Giving that dog its freedom it deserves and get a robot instead. Does that appeal to you at all?
Would it be like, you know, the comedy sketches where you see someone with an invisible dog, they've got like a tight lead with an empty collar and they get pulled around? Would it be like that? Because that would be
nice.
Good fun.
Yeah, that would be nice. I mean, the thing is, this has been a conversation for years, hasn't it? You know, what will eventually become the robot guide dog? Will we ever get to a point where we get rid of guide dogs, where we stop, not get rid of them, that sounds terrible, but, you know, we stop producing
technology would,
dogs as guide dogs. Yeah, that's
maybe
the best way to put it.
Let's not talk about getting rid of dogs.
I know, that just sounds awful. But, you know, I mean, a lot of people...
Fill the pound.
A lot of people want a guide dog, but for various reasons can't have them. Now, my wife is going through this right now as we speak, actually. She's on class with her first guide dog. She did go through this whole process about maybe a year ago, and unfortunately it didn't work for her because the dog gave her allergies. It was a black lab retriever cross, and that gave some serious problems with her allergies. And that's, of course, a challenge, right? So, you know, if this, and we're hoping her new dog, which is a pure lab, golden lab, gorgeous little dog called Coco, very small lab, actually, and she's absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, we hope that it'll work this time. But, you know, already she's starting to itch a bit. And, you know, my wife, that is. Oh. And, you know, it's not good for her. You know, we hope that this will work out. But this is the challenge, right? So for people who need a guide dog, who don't want the white cane, and look, I'm with everybody on this one because I hate the white cane. I put it out there and I say it. I don't like it, but I have to use it. It's a necessary evil for me. I'd love a guide dog, but I don't have time for the responsibility that comes with it. And the dog demands a lot of your time, rightly so. And I just don't have that time to offer. So when I heard about Anthony Camus's device, which is a new device that will hopefully make it easier for blind and partially sighted people to navigate and be that bridge between an actual guide dog and a white cane, I was quite interested. Our reporter Polina Kohorev has the story for Tech Talk.
Anthony Camus is a graduate of industrial design and technology at Loughborough University and designed a unique guiding device for the blind and visually impaired. Going by the name Thea, this clever handheld robot can guide you from point A to B without needing the assistance of a guide dog. Now, this can be particularly useful for anyone who can't have a guide dog because of allergies or simply lacks the means of housing one. So to find out more about the device, Anthony, creator of this guide aid, joins me on the line now. Hi, Anthony.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. So I said Thea is quite a unique device because when you actually look at it, you wouldn't think guiding aid.
I know. It's sort of a handheld device. And at first, before you actually get a chance to read about it and what it does, it's quite difficult to know what it actually does because to be honest, it seems like a completely different and new concept. And part of this is because it sort of utilizes the most cutting-edge modern technology to provide a solution that visually impaired people and blind people deserve. It's basically an integration of as much technology as you can to provide this experience into a neat package, which you can almost fit it in your pocket and you can put it in your rucksack, because convenience was, of course, the main thing to sort of distill into the product. So you can use this thing when you are in restaurants or when you're walking through town. You can put it away when you're not using it. And unlike a cane, it takes up no space on the ground. So the main intention when designing this product was to make sure that, you know, visually impaired people and blind people have as least limitations as possible, so they can walk without having to worry about anything, without having to hassle about sort of visualizing the environment. So the intention of all of this was to sort of replicate a guide dog's functions, because that was the best way to start. That was the best way to understand, you know, what are the visually impaired people's issues. And I understood, mainly from investigation, user research, and talking to experts, that this is mainly walking in a straight line and avoiding obstacles.
So you said it kind of replicates a guide dog. How exactly does it work? Let's say I want to go to a nearby park. How would I use Thea?
Well, if you wanted to go to a park, let's say you were starting in your house, it would be activated by a voice command at first. And then once you simply pick it up from its stand into your hand, you would then leave your house and then you would hold the device forward. And from there, it would communicate mostly to you through haptics and through feel. So since guide dogs, they're quite quiet, from my understanding, the same sort of thing is replicated in Thea. I mean, you're mainly holding this device and it's leading you around like a guide dog. And it sort of translates that feeling of the pulling of the leash and everything that comes with it into this handheld device. And I think that's what makes it special.
So what would you say are the other kind of best-selling points of Thea?
The best-selling points, well, I think it's definitely the force feedback element. It's the idea, it's the sort of the novelty of having something pulling you along and making the decisions for you. The main thing about it is that you don't need to see and you don't need to think. You're just following it like you would a guide dog. And it tries to take all the important decisions out of the process of walking. So you don't have to concentrate on sort of building a cognitive map or visualizing the environment. All of that aims to be taken care of by artificial intelligence and deep learning and technologies such as these integrated into this device.
And do you have to teach Thea how to get to certain locations, or does it use a sort of integrated software for that?
Yeah, I mean, it does to an extent sort of learn about the user, you know, their walking pace, sort of their physicality and how they can adapt to different situations. And that's sort of formed as part of the package, making it as adaptable to as many people as possible, because I understand that visual impairment, there's such a broad spectrum of conditions that you can have, and also a lot of the visually impaired population are over the age of 50. So all of these things were sort of factored in the equation to create a system that was lightweight enough and was functional enough to prove to be a feasible solution for as many people as possible.
And you said it replicates how you're guided by a guide dog, but could it actually replace a guide dog?
It's difficult to say, because in my mind, you can't sort of replace the emotional attachment you have with the guide dog. One argument could be that you could have a normal dog with you, because this device would allow you to not even require the need to have a guide dog in that sense. But I think personally that, you know, it's in development and things are happening quickly, but it's a long process and to really understand where it's going to go, I can't really give a definitive answer about that, I'm afraid.
Because it's still a prototype and you're still having to work quite a lot on it, even though you've just graduated.
I know, right? Yes, it's received interest, certainly. And I'm definitely looking into investigating the possibilities, you know, my future possibilities. And I hope to find, you know, support to make, you know, the Fear project a reality.
And how can we find out more about Thea?
Well, I'm going to organise a social media campaign, I think, called the Thea Project, to try and pull together as much sort of information from the visually impaired community and experts and large technology firms, like whatever I can do in order to make this thing happen. And I think the important thing is collaboration and bringing as many people together to make this dream a realistic thing that can actually happen.
Anthony Camo, really appreciate your time chatting with us today, and I wish you all the best in finalising Thea's design, and hopefully sometime in the future we'll see lots of people walking around with a Thea.
Yeah, hopefully. Thank you very much.
Well, good luck to Anthony. Thank you to Polina Cahora for sourcing that story and reporting for us on Tech Talk this week. Very interesting story, Robin. And it does sound a bit like what you're looking for, doesn't it? The sort of dog pulling on the leash in a haptic sense.
So many questions, honestly. So, I mean, I would love this to be viable and, you know, to really tick the box as far as, you know, almost replacing a guide dog. I mean, there are so many things why intelligence that you have within an actual animal that's been well trained serves you well, whether it's finding a bus stop or finding the door of a building or obstacle avoidance or hazard detection. You know, so many times I have approached roadworks or something where the barrier is missing or it's not, you know, it's been blown over or something. And if you've got a great big hole in the pavement, would this thing stop? You know, how would it alert you of that? Mm. Until I think we get to the point where there is AI in these devices that are as intelligent or almost as intelligent as a living animal in knowing what it's seeing, being able to analyze it, etc. I think we're just going to have like a glorified sonar detector or something. So yeah, there's so many questions about how it's done. You know, how can this thing that you hold in your hand pull you forward? How can it, you know, guide you as effortlessly so that you can, like, you know, switch off basically? I know you shouldn't, but I for one often do. It's that simple to be guided by an actual dog that's, you know, pulling you on the harness.
Well, once that trust has been developed, I'm sure, because that's
absolutely
interesting. My wife is this; she's coming at this from a new guide dog user perspective, and she's saying, you know, one day I hope I'll be able to just sort of hand over to the dog, which is, of course, the whole point, right? I mean, you can't fully do that. That's not fair to the dog. You have to involve. You're in charge. It's not. This is why people think that the dog can read bus numbers and, you know, do all this, because they think that blind people just, you know. I mean, it always amazes me that, you know, the guide dogs are superstars and the people who they're you know, ferrying around are complete idiots. How people
you certainly can't hand over all responsibility when you leave your house to the dog.
No,
absolutely
can't.
Not. But the low-level stuff, a bit like, you know, your body, you don't have to think to breathe or for your heart to pump. The autonomous system just does its thing. But you do have to think to scratch your nose. Well, actually, maybe that's not a good example. But, you know, there's lots that you have to think about that is conscious. Well, it's the same with a dog. The basics for just helping you go along safely really does happen subconsciously. And there's a good amount of tension on the handle. You know, when you're working well together, there is a huge amount of trust built up, etc. There's an awful lot that you still need to be aware of. Traffic, you know, potential hazards and that sort of thing. They're not 100% perfect with upper body obstacles. So if you're coming across something and it feels like, oh, there's a huge van parked here, maybe there's going to be a huge wing mirror sticking out a little bit further down that the dog may or may not take me around. So you absolutely need to be aware. And, you know,
but no technology is going to be good enough to do that, is it? I mean, you know, you'd
well,
have to.
He said that there's cutting edge technology in there. And I hope that what he's meaning is, you know, that it really will be kind of, you know, take this to a new level.
Yeah.
Certainly one day, absolutely. But
it's got the attitude control systems of spacecraft to move the user's hands and lead them.
Which anything I think just means gyroscopes, to be honest.
Yeah,
but
it's got gyroscoping, yeah. I want to play devil's advocate here, because there's one thing we seem to be missing that guide dogs provide, apart from guiding you to the shops and back, which is companionship.
Yeah, you can't take this thing, you know, and hug it at night.
No, you've got to plug it in to charge it. But
yeah,
I mean, he was implying that you could have a pet dog as well, because you'd be freed up to, you know, so you could kind of cover your bases that way. But
so the argument there is that this is going to be cheaper than having a guide dog is, well, unfortunate, because you're going to have a dog anyway if you want companionship. So
except that we should say that guide dogs do cover the, if you, you know, even to the extent of your food bills, and obviously vet bills are covered. You know, if you can't afford to pay for the food for your dog, everything's covered.
Yeah.
So
there's no barrier with guide dogs, that's for sure.
Yeah,
but no, yeah. I mean, for me, it's always been, I've always made the joke about, you know, I'd love a guide dog that I could just, you know, roll up and stick in a bag
or,
you know, throw in the cupboard at night. You know, that would be great, because that's essentially what the white stick is, but it's not anywhere near that experience. And, you know, every guide dog owner I know waxes lyrical about the joy of having a guide dog. I just don't have the time or the ability to do that. I just, unfortunately, in my life, I don't. I'd love to, but, you know, having this, really thought about it, I just can't do it, you know. So it's not
this
for
is
me.
Ideal for you, though, because this is a guide dog that has a USB extension port in it, or, you know, has Wi-Fi
firmware update.
I can get my don't do that with a Labrador.
No, don't do that. But I think that I can't remember what I was going to say now. I was thinking of a USB socket on a guide dog.
Maybe on the harness there could be like a USB charger.
Oh, that's right.
An idea.
So that's why I'm thinking, well, you could have LED go faster stripes on it, maybe, the guide dog. The social bonus of having a guide dog, sorry, Andy, is so massive. It really is. You know, people come up to you. It's such a positive thing from a social point of view. Mm. And I've got a fear that this one will kind of have the opposite effect, because people just think you're about to taser them, maybe. So I don't know.
I think that's the point, right? So, you know, there is an issue with walking around with something that people don't know what it is. I mean, it's hard enough with a white cane, even though the white cane's been around for, I don't know, I mean, I think dinosaurs used them as well. even though that's the case, people don't understand it, they don't know what it is. So you walk down the street as a blind person with something that isn't touching the ground, that isn't a guide dog. How is that going to be reacted to? How will people know that you're blind? I mean, you know, you'd have to almost build this thing so it had the word blind written on it, so people understood. And that, you don't want that either. You know, we all want to live in a world where we all just move around like everybody else, and we have no labels on us. But unfortunately, that's just not possible, I don't think.
And you've made me think of another really, really essential part of holding that harness handle, is that the amount of information that you get from it is so fine and so kind of nuanced that, for example, when Hugo goes up a curb, I can tell from through the handle whether it's a normal sized curb, whether it's just a tiny one, or whether it's a, you know, jumbo sized one or whatever, or a ramp. You get all of that information. How would you possibly get that with something that doesn't touch the ground? You know, that's an important part of a cane, isn't it, that you get information about the terrain?
Well, you know, I use the WeWalk cane. I've actually got one. Ooh. I've been demoing for a while, and it's good. Again, this is slightly different because it is a white cane, or at least it's got a white cane attached to it. So you essentially take off the original handle and you replace it with this this particular handle, which has got a haptic feedback on it, and it's got sensors on it that can do all those things you were looking for, Robin, you know, the ability to sort of see chest height and above. Mm-hmm. So if you're coming up against overhanging branches, or even people are in front of you, some are saying this is also good for social distancing, you know, these days, then that could be good, because you could set your distance to 2 meters, and you could say, well, anything in that 2 meter range, it will tell me, it will give me haptic feedback. But my experience of this, and it is early days, but my experience has been that it gives you so much feedback that you actually lose the feedback that is key for the white cane. You know, like you say,
the old-fashioned stuff through the handle.
Well, that's really important, you know. The type of, you know, I mean, it sounds daft, but the type of surface that you're walking towards, or you're walking on, or you're about to walk on, or that's beside you, you'll be able to tell that it's grass versus concrete, or you'll be able to tell that the road dips before you know, fall into it. You know, those things are really important with the white cane. That's why I use it. For me, it's all about depth perception is my key. I've got no sense of depth perception, so, you know, I can't tell when a pavement stops and, you know, when we move to the, you know, or else a set of steps, and, you know, how deep those steps are, all the rest of it, where they start, where they end. So the cane gives me all that information. If you add extra vibrations and extra haptic sense all to that, I think that can give you too much information. And my fear is information overload. Now, my feeling at the moment is something like we talked about last week with Ira, you know, that coupled with a guide dog or a white cane is a good solution. And I think it's instead of looking at one solution, this isn't to do down Anthony's design here, because I think Anthony's got a great idea. And I think, you know, in 10 years' time, we might be talking very differently about this kind of thing. But I think at the moment, what I see is a sense of, you know, a number of tools in the toolbox that you really need. You can't just live with one. It's not just a white cane. It's not just a guide dog. A combination of tools, whether it be My Eyes or Aira or Seeing AI or whatever tool it is you choose to use to help you on the outside. And, you know, obviously, if you're traveling around, GPS apps and, you know, location apps and navigation apps and all those things, all of that together is what you need. And finding a way to consume all that information whilst, you know, trying not to get a headache and you know, ruin your day with all this overload that you get. It is tricky. It really is tricky as a blind person. There's a lot of information in the world to take in when you don't have the visual ability to do it. You know, and just going out for a walk is fraught with danger. That's why I don't do it very often. People laugh and say, oh, just go for a walk. It's a lovely day. And I'm thinking, yeah, but do you know the amount of planning that goes into me just going out for a walk? You know,
I want to get home. If I hadn't been a white cane user for 18 months, I wouldn't know in my very soul exactly what you mean, but I do. So yeah. I totally get it. And there might be a lot of people out there listening to this saying, please let this work. Please let this come in 2 years rather than 10.
Yeah.
Because my mobility isn't pleasant with a long cane. Now, I don't want to diminish or in any way underplay the importance of a white cane. You know, and for people that can't have a guide dog for whatever reason, you know, it's an absolute essential, you know, part of your independence.
Well, it's for me.
Which is why I want this to work. But I'm not sure when.
I think we might be a bit early in the day for it. But, you know, look, we haven't even tried it yet, so let's not destroy it before we...
Yeah.
let's let Anthony have his moment. But I think good luck to Anthony with this, because, you know, there's people like Anthony coming up with these ideas that will push us forward to the next level. And it's where it's how we will get to the whatever that solution is one day. Yeah, very interesting story. You can listen to it again on RNIB's podcast channel. We have lots of them, so just search wherever you get your podcasts for RNIB. Coming up, we're going to be hearing about the Braillists Foundation. Dave Williams set this up to promote Braille and encourage others to get involved and to learn Braille as well. We'll talk about their podcast they do and their live Braille class every Monday evening that happens on Zoom. I know lots of you out there will be interested in this because I've been looking for somewhere to top up my skills, and I think I may have found it, so I'll tell you about it a bit later. But right now it's time for this.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day.
Every day.
Here's your mail today.
Every hour.
You'll need to update this jingle.
Yeah.
Right, let's get into the mailbox then. What are people saying today, Andy?
Right, let's start off with an email from Paul. Hi, Robin, Andy, and Stephen. Hope you're well. I wanted to write to you as I have followed the show for some considerable time now, and I really enjoy the content.
Hey.
Thanks, Paul.
This is going on something that we were talking about on the last episode. I thought I would provide some further feedback on the recent launch of Aira. Not that I'm on commission or anything, but I thought it might help others to make an informed choice, as I think it's a great service. I've also used Be My Eyes recently, and I would still use them, but I greatly value the professional agents in Aira. Recently, I received bank card information, and it was assuring to be able to log into the system and obtain the information independently without the need to wait for a friend to come round. I think, in general, the pricing is reasonable, and whilst I probably couldn't justify shelving out for the advanced plan presently, I am on the intro plan, which works out at around £6 per week. Considering the first 5 minutes of every call are free, and that they are happy for individuals to call back a couple of times, as Robin mentioned last week, for short tasks, I think this is reasonable. We don't have many access locations in the UK at present, and the service is only free of charge at the RNIB and Gatwick Airport.
And sorry, just to clarify that point there, just in case anyone's wondering what an access location is, that's an area where you can use Aira for free in that location. Yeah. Most namely in America, you'll find these. They are airports. I think Heathrow here has it. I think that's an access location. Am I right?
I believe so. But I mean, obviously, it hasn't been here long. So yeah. Touch wood, those will multiply in the not too distant future.
Which is great, because then you get access to, and somewhere like an airport, you might want someone available to you for quite a considerable amount of time to get to your gate. And, you know, one of the big stories that came out was someone who actually was able to get through an airport on their own just with Ira and put their cane away, which was even more terrifying. Wouldn't recommend that, but that's it was one of the pieces of PR that was done, and apparently it was quite successful. I know the guy that actually did it, and he was raving about how wonderful it was. Anyway, sorry, back to the email.
Yes, there is also free technical support for the range of Vispero products. Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
Vispero? Yeah, yeah.
Along with other occasional promotions, including demos, where you can have up to 15 minutes demonstrating free of charge to friends or other VIs. And I use this service frequently during the pilot when I wasn't able to access certain websites. Furthermore, it is worth noting that there are other ways to obtain free minutes. If you know of someone who could benefit, the invite a friend option is an easy way to earn minutes, and that these don't expire, unlike the paid plans. You can invite someone through the app, and once they register with the provided link and they make the initial call, they will receive 30 minutes free, as well as the person who invited them. You can also buy blocks of minutes for those times when you might need extra, and there's no minimum contract. I thought I would also provide the UK prices. Did we cover this last week, the prices?
We did, yeah. You can get them all at ira.io. is where you'll get all that information.
There are currently running a series of webinars covering the aspects of the service, the first two episodes covering Ira, an overview, and traveling out and about with Ira. But you would have got all that because you listened to our episode last week with Will. I hope other listeners found the information helpful, and keep up the good work. That is from Paul Clayton.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. And we'll actually be hearing more from Will next week on the show. He's going to be talking about being at home and using Ira to get some help in identifying objects. You know, it's an interesting service. Lots of you obviously starting to take interest in it as it's launched in the UK. So we'll look forward to hearing more of your thoughts on that. Techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Thank you, Paul. Just a quick note from Teresa, who got in touch, by the way, just before we started putting the show together here. We got this email from Teresa. Her partner, unfortunately, the Focus 40 Braille display that he has broken down. And a new one is on the way, but apparently it will take weeks to get there. Weeks, I tell you. Teresa's partner would kind of like to get back into doing some Braille stuff before that. So for that reason, Teresa's asking if anyone out there has one that either could be loaned, or if there's a Braille display that isn't being used somewhere, that just lying gathering dust, is it possible, Steve, that you could get in touch? Yeah.
You've opened up the... You've opened up the swap shop again.
This one's not a swap. This is just a can I have?
She might
have
something to swap.
No, don't start all this again. Do you know, we had about an hour of conversation on this, and this was off air, thank goodness, because we'd have bored everybody to tears. But no, this is an interesting question from Teresa, who says, you know, if you can get in touch, if this is something that you have, maybe a Braille display lying around you don't use anymore, then get in touch. So get in touch with us here at Tech Talk in the first instance, and we'll connect you if that's feasible. So yeah, good luck with that one, Teresa. Andy, what else is in the mailbox?
Steve has emailed in with a question for Robin. Dear Tech Talk, I just heard the latest podcast, and I heard Robin say about creating a shortcut series of letters to save him typing in his email address when required. Sorry if this is a silly question, but could Robin explain how this is done, as it would be very useful? Also, is this just for iOS devices, or is there also a way to do it with the Windows 10 PC? Thanks for your help and for such a useful and entertaining program. Kind regards from Steve.
Thanks, Steve. So, yeah, in iOS, you go into the Settings app, go to General. Under there, you will see Keyboard. In there, you will see Text Replacement. And if you go in there, then you can... There are some standard ones in there like OMW for On My Way and things like that. But just tap on the add button, put in your short phrase, your short, you know, few characters. And then in the next box down, you put in the long form thing you want to replace it with. I don't know what the limits of that are, whether you could put a whole paragraph. I'm not sure whether it allows spaces. I should have looked into that, shouldn't I?
Oh, it does.
Great.
So I'll give you
a good example. A phrase in.
A good example.
Of course, On My Way.
Well, that's right. But I mean, I use it all the time for Uber, weirdly enough, right? So in the days when we could travel, remember those days? Well, I used to use it where if I had an Uber driver picking me up, I would send them a message and I'd have to type it all the time until I discovered text replacement. And it says something like, you know, I am blind. I'm the guy standing with the dark glasses and the white cane. And I thought, you know, if I could just find a quick way of putting all that information in. So I do. I just have you. So I know in my head it's for Uber. And then every time I want to type that, I just type you and hit space. And it converts it to that phrase or that paragraph. It just drops it in and then I hit send. So it's really easy. It's a brilliant feature.
One day you might need to change that to the man with the sunglasses and the robot guide dog.
That's right, yeah. And the dog lead without a dog on it, yeah.
I was just saying, I saw that in action when we were down for TechShare Pro, I believe, in London. Stephen tried it out. We were outside a tube station and our hotel was miles away. And he went, nope, I'm getting an Uber. And he went, da-da-da-da-da. And yeah. That's all explained.
I think you've been very kind. I think the hotel was probably 5 second walk away. Like, no, nope, I'm not walking anywhere.
Well, we've covered that already. Yeah. So, and the other part of Steve's question was about a similar thing on PC.
Windows, yeah.
Yeah, now I don't know that there's anything built into Windows. I don't think there is. There is clever hacks you can do with a very deeply buried, I think actually by default hidden, directory which has the autocorrect dictionary files for Windows.
Boring.
But I wouldn't recommend doing that. There are loads and loads of utilities if you search for text replacement utility for Windows. And I briefly tried one called Phrase Express, but it was horrendously inaccessible and I gave up at that point. So, I mean, obviously, if you've got JAWS or NVDA, you can do clever things with the scripts or, you know, cleverness within those screen readers. So that's what I would do. But do you know of any third-party utilities for Windows?
No, I haven't heard of any of these. I mean, I must admit, it's not something I've done. I mean, I've heard a lot of people using dictation instead of typing, which is another way of doing it. Mm-hmm. That's a thing I know is more common now than was, because, you know, even Windows is better than this. Even Windows is better at that these days. But, yeah, I mean, it's... I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's not a feature I have thought about, because I mean, you're inputting with a keyboard, right? So it's not like you don't need to. I mean, I guess unless you've got trouble touch typing, but you know,
common phrases, I mean, it's all about automation and efficiency and that sort of thing. You know, everyone should be wanting to be more efficient if you're having to do the same thing lots of times, and particularly with email addresses and that sort of thing. You know, that would help with accuracy and stuff. But yeah, maybe if any listeners know about a good accessible way of doing it in Windows, I'd actually be really... Yeah,
I would. Yeah, but also, you know, just a point on text replacement for the iOS devices. It also applies... So anything you do, anything you set up under text replacement on the iPhone will translate to the iPad. It will translate to your Mac as well. So, you know, you can be on your Mac and type the same you hit space and the same thing will drop in. It will replace that text there as well, which is amazing. Because the Mac's amazing. Just buy Mac. Just buy Mac. Simple as that.
Just one last tip on this.
Very quickly.
Particularly for people that have dyslexia, for example, or who, like me, have got into bad habits in touch typing over the years. I often type TEH for the, for example. If you use the autocorrect feature within Office, and that obviously applies to Mac and that, you know, all span the different platforms too, if you put in your top 50 or 100 or 5, whatever you want, number of most commonly mistyped or misspelt words, and then every time you hit spacebar at the end or a full stop or something, it will automagically go away and be corrected. That could transform your essays, your documents, your emails and whatever. And that is a top tip for people that, you know, have difficulty in spelling.
Okay, let's move on, because I want to get to more emails, but first I want to tell you all about the Braillists Foundation. I've been talking with Dave Williams about this. He set up the foundation to promote Braille and encourage others to get involved and learn. Now, they've got a fortnightly podcast. They've got a live Braille class over Zoom every Monday evening as well. Let's hear more about this from Dave Williams, who set up the Braillists Foundation. He also works here at RNIB as well. Hi to you, Dave.
Hello, thank you very much for having me on.
Tell us how this all started then. Tell us about the Braillists Foundation, which says the mission is more Braille. I like it.
really simple. Yeah. So about 5 years ago, a company down in Bristol, a community interest company, were looking for blind people to test their Braille device that they were developing at the time. So a few of us came together and started talking about that device, but other Braille equipment and then other Braille issues. And there were some changes to the Braille code around that time. And also the fact, you know, the thing you've just alluded to, a lot of people, when they start to learn Braille, they're doing that remotely, they're doing that in isolation. And what we wanted to try and do was bring people together, offer a hub, offer a way to contact developers of Braille equipment, and a way for people to get their Braille questions answered. So the Braillists Foundation was born in early 2020. We registered with the Charity Commission, and then during the lockdown for the pandemic, we've been quite active with regular community calls. So yeah, the Braillist Foundation, More Braille, our mission really, just to try and enable blind and partially sighted people who have an interest in Braille to get their questions answered and to maybe perhaps move on a bit with Braille.
Yeah, I kind of became aware of you because of a tweet, I think it was, where someone was talking about taking part in a Braille class over Zoom. And of course, everything has moved to Zoom or Teams or, you know, Google Meet or whatever. Everyone's on one of these platforms now to communicate and get in touch with each other, which is brilliant. And I thought, wow, what a great idea. Why has no one done this before? It seems like an obvious question, doesn't it, Dave? Why has no one done this before?
Well, necessity being the mother of invention and all of that, you know, the circumstances were that people couldn't meet face to face. And so we had to find other ways of doing that. We weren't teaching Braille before that point, but Jenny Langley, who is a teacher of the visually impaired based down in Exeter, had made a very generous offer online that she was willing to help teach Braille for anybody who really wanted to learn. And so I reached out to Jenny and said, look, you know, we have got some people that want to learn. You're clearly qualified. How about leading a weekly session where people can come along with, you know, the course that they're following? So we've been using the RNIB fingerprint course. And so this is a series of hard copy Braille books that you receive at home, because clearly, you know, you still need to touch Braille, you still need to use equipment to write Braille, but then connecting online using Zoom, it could be any other, you know, conferencing platform, it gives you the moral support and it gives you the opportunity to share ideas, hints and tips. How can I remember this? What's the best way to practice this? How can I make this useful? Oh, I'm struggling to, you know, work with a certain Braille contraction. And so it becomes, you know, a little bit of a kind of a peer support group as much as anything else.
And now those classes are continuing at the moment, and there's a hope that that will restart at some point for people. I mean, obviously, most people will have missed the beginning of it. So if somebody wants to get access to this, then what, they just check out the website for more information or follow Twitter, or how do they do that?
Yeah, so the classes started in April, and so we're quite far on with it now, but we hope to restart later in the year for people who want to start from the very beginning. But if you wanted to kind of drop in and get a flavor, if you go to braillists.org/staysafe and click on the link there, and that will allow you to join the Zoom room on a Monday evening at 7 p.m. That's when we have our regular Braille for Beginners sessions.
Now, the website's a great place to go. You've got a podcast as well?
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Braillecast. That's a monthly podcast, usually runs about half an hour. We quite often get a guest on there and talk about, you know, some aspect of Braille. So recent podcast, we talked with the National Braille Press in Boston in the United States about how they continue to work as a national Braille publisher during lockdown. We've interviewed the ladies behind UEB Online. This is an online course where you can learn unified English Braille. And we also speak with readers and technologists and anybody really who has an interest in Braille.
Amazing. Well, braillists.org is the place to go. Dave Williams, thank you so much for sharing the information.
You're very welcome.
Great. Great to hear from Dave there, talking about the Braillists Foundation. Robin, you know, as someone who needs to clearly crack on with their Braille, I mean, you know, you've been slipping and sliding, quite frankly. It's not good enough, and you need to improve. So get on the course, man. Come on.
Lamentable. If I've been sliding, then I'm actually further back than when I started because I've done zip, zilch, nada. I haven't even tried to read an aspirin packet recently.
That's disgraceful.
Sorry, fail whale.
Fail whale. Wow. I have a sense that is my new hashtag for many reasons. I like it. Right. Okay. Well, do check it out. I think a lot of people are going to be really keen on the class. You know, that is one thing that we've been asked a lot about on the show, and it's we've not really had an answer to that question for a long time. Where do you go to get Braille lessons? And it's funny, well, it's not funny, but it's taken a pandemic to get these things kicking up and, you know, actually get these things on the move and actually available remotely. That's the key. It's available remotely. You don't have to go to a location or be in a particular part of the UK on a Monday night, you know, at that time. You could just be at your home and connect on Zoom. It does, of course, involve some equipment. You're going to have to think about that. If you want to get involved, you need a Perkins Brailler of some kind, or you know, you at least need to have access to the books, which are challenging to get hold of. But R&B do stock them, and they are continuing to get more in. As a result of this course, actually, there's been a huge upsurge in interest in that. So, yeah, if you want more information on the books that Dave talked about, the fingerprint course, you can get that. Actually, I think it was originally the Royal National College in Hereford that produced this. Someone there, and then RNIB has taken that on and kept publishing it, which is brilliant. So if you want more information, go to rnib.org.uk/shop, or you can call RNIB's helpline. Best way actually to go is 0303 123 9999, and the helpline will put you through to the store and let you know how you can buy the fingerprint course, and also will let you know if they're in stock. So yeah, there you go. That is the Braillists Foundation. Thank you for that, Dave. Right, let's get back to the emails.
Email. We get email.
Yeah, we get the point. Right, Andy, back to the email inbox.
From one Dave to another. This is Dave in Dublin. He says, "Hi, lads. Like Stephen and Robin, I am both a Mac and Windows user.
Yes.
And I wonder if you could help me with a couple of things on the Windows side."
No! Or is that because everything on the Mac side is beautiful?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Or, if not help, at least assure me that I'm not alone in tearing my hair out. Firstly, email threading or conversation viewing.
Oh, dear.
In Mail on Mac and indeed on the iPhone, this works great. VoiceOver will say three message conversation, the participant's name, the subject, and the time of the last message. You push VO space and it'll expand or collapse the thread menu and tell you so. Fantastic. Now I go to Outlook or Windows Mail on Windows 10, and conversation view is a confusing mess. It's not clear to me what is a conversation and what is an individual message at times, or how many messages are in a thread. No matter the screen reader used, I can't seem to use it efficiently, making it much harder to be organized at work. Am I missing something? My other point is about Narrator. I recently installed Windows 10 on a boot camp partition on my Mac, and while I stick to JAWS on my work laptop for the most part, I am, so far at least, using Narrator as my primary screen reader on the personal boot camp machine. So far, I'm pretty happy with it, I must say. But what in the name of all that is holy are they doing in Excel? If you type the number 123 into A1, for example, JAWS and NVDA will simply say 123, A1, when you focus on it. Narrator, though, says A1, selected, editable, column 2, row 2, item, 123. I mean, what is that? The other tip on Narrator is that people may find that their mileage will vary depending on the version of Windows 10 that they're on. My work laptop, being a large corporation, is still back on Windows 10 version 1809, while I find Narrator has more problems on my personal machine. Web browsing, for example, is a disaster. Anyway, thanks for the great show. Enjoying it. That's from Dave in Dublin.
Thanks, Dave. Yeah, there's a few things there. All right, do you want to start that one off, Robin?
Absolutely. So, yes, I can concur. Dave is right. Outlook. I don't know about Mail. I haven't used the Mail client that's built into Windows 10, but it's I think, pretty basic, but certainly Outlook, when you turn on conversation view, i.e. when, say, you had six emails in your inbox that represented different stages of a conversation, and obviously there's going to be stuff in your sent items and potentially in your deleted items as well pertaining to that same thread, then it is really useful, like you can do in iOS and macOS, to turn on conversation view so that as you're arrowing up and down through your inbox, for example, you'll suddenly hit a block of messages all to do with that thread, that conversation, in chronological order. That works brilliantly on those other ones, but in Outlook, no, it doesn't work. You don't really know which is the newest or the oldest. When you hit enter on one, I think visually it's expanding and collapsing the block, but I can't see any way of actually opening an email in that thread with hitting enter on it. It just seems to expand and collapse the block. So is there some mouse dependency there? I don't know, but I gave up and went back. And I've long regretted the lack of support there, because that's a really useful feature. So I feel your pain there. And with regards to Narrator, I mean, you know, by all means jump in, but certainly since 1809, which is what he's got at work, there have been a lot of improvements. So I'm not sure why, you know, he's finding Narrator on his home machine, which I'm imagining is more up to date, not quite so functional. You know, we've talked about the improvements in recent updates to Windows for Narrator in recent episodes, but I've got 2004 in my VM here, virtual machine on my Mac, and it's obviously got the latest version of Narrator. I went into Excel, which is the latest version for Office 365, and I've got good news, which is that it no longer says A1 and then 58 different things that Andy's just read out, and then 1, 2, 3. It now just says A1 cell, and it doesn't actually read out the contents of it at all. So, yeah, it's not as verbose, but it's actually not helpful at all. You actually would have to do a say line to read the contents of the cell. So support in Excel with the built-in screen reader, not so good.
Can I ask you about JAWS and Excel? Because I've never really gone down the route with Excel.
So supremely supported.
Right.
The scripts, if you look at the scripts for Excel that have been written to make it speak well, there's enough code in that script to write a spreadsheet program.
Right.
It's absolutely huge. It's very, very well supported.
Wow, amazing. Okay, well, that's some interesting food for thought, Dave. I hope that helps. I have nothing to add to that. Nothing that would make any sense or be worthwhile. So let's move on. Andy.
An email from Chris with the title, "Where's My Son?"
This is interesting. Right.
This is S-O-N, is it?
S-O-N.
That's a bit alarming.
Because if he said S-U-N, I would assume he was Scottish.
Yeah, we don't get any.
No.
He says, "Hi, chaps. First, I must congratulate you on the wealth of knowledge and enthusiasm you bring to each episode. Simply amazing."
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
There you go.
Hang on, is this for us? Is this for Tech Talk, yeah?
It's just me personally, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I really enjoy listening to your podcasts, and I hope you might be able to advise me. I've been registered blind since I was 8. I'm fortunate that the limited vision I have has remained unchanged so far. I'm now 52. I describe my vision as blurred so that I am able to walk independently without bumping into people or tripping over things. However, I cannot recognize people or read shop names, etc. I have a very active 11-year-old son. Seems odd to say that, really, he says in brackets. Him and I spend a lot of time...
Which bit's odd, anyway?
Yeah.
He and I spend a lot of time at the beach in all weathers. My problem is finding him once I've lost sight of him, which happens very quickly and very often. And my son has attention deficit hypertension disorder, people will know as ADHD, which for him means he wouldn't think to check if I was nearby or think to find me if he couldn't see me. Irony here is that once I have lost sight of my son, he could watch me searching for him, but he would not think to get my attention. This does nothing for my blood pressure, he says with a smiley face after. I wondered if there was any kind of tracking solution here. Now, I can use a smartphone, however, I can't see the screen on bright days. So I wondered if there might be some form of speech or audible output solution. The other issue is that if it is included, for example, a GPS tag that my son would need to carry or wear, I'm sure he would just take it off and attach it to a passing dog, he says.
Throw it in the sea.
Or throw it in the sea, yeah. Attach it to a dolphin. Any advice you might be able to offer would be hugely appreciated. Keep up the great work with warm wishes. That's Chris in Bognor Regis.
I'm now imagining all these dolphins off Bognor Regis covered in tile tags.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to suggest.
Yeah.
So, tell I've not been to Bognor Regis if I think there's dolphins there, but there you go. Maybe there is.
Well, these days, who knows?
Mm. I mean, apart from a big stretchy wrist strap, I would probably go with the tile option, like you've said, because it's super easy to make the tile play its tune. And the tiles can be quite small, particularly the ones that don't have replaceable batteries. So the one I've got is like a jumbo Scrabble tile. It's maybe an inch and a bit across and maybe a quarter of an inch thick. So you could possibly squeeze that into his, you know, the coins pocket in your jeans, and he wouldn't know it's there. Mm-hmm. But you can get smaller ones as well. And the battery lasts about a year. And then just use your phone. The Tile app supports Siri shortcuts, I think, so you could just ask Siri to where is my son or whatever, and it would you know, whatever you name that, because you can name shortcuts to be whatever you like, and that would then ring that tile for him. If it's a noisy beach and he's 100 meters away, obviously that's not going to work, but it's pretty loud, so if he's within 100 feet maybe.
Well, what about the phone? Because how old is he? 11?
Yeah.
So
he'll chuck it in the sea.
Well, I mean, well, the thing is that he's probably less likely to chuck it in the sea. I mean, it's one thing he probably won't chuck in the sea. So
get him addicted to smartphones and then track him using it. That's it.
But that's the thing, though. I mean, you could use that because you can ping a phone. So you could
if he's
ping,
already addicted, then
if
yes.
But if
that's
he's got the phone,
solution.
You can ping it. So that's another way of doing it.
Absolutely. And that actually, you know, the simplest way to do that is for you to have a tile, because you can just double click the tile in your pocket.
That's right.
And that
yeah.
phone will actually, that's a good idea if he's addicted to it already. I wouldn't suggest applying an addiction just so that he, oh no, I don't know, it would be worth it. Any parent that's lost sight of their child, even for 30 seconds, knows that feeling, and they would any price would be
destroy your child's self-esteem and self-confidence by getting them addicted to smartphones.
The problem is he won't want to go to the beach again after that. He'll just sit at home on his phone. But
that
anyway,
might be preferable as well. But look, here's a really low-tech solution to this, and this comes not from me but from a friend of mine who is a blind mum, and she says one of the things she struggles with, and I don't know how well this would work on a beach, but it's an idea. One thing she did for her toddlers, she had a real problem trying to find the kids when they were around the house. You know what kids are like, right? They've figured out that mum's blind, that they can do what they like, and as long as they're quiet about it, they can get away with it. And the problem is that of course can be a challenge for the mum who's trying to find them. So what she did was she got these little bells. It's actually the same bells that you get on for guide dogs. A lot of the guide dogs have them around their neck on their what do you call it, collars. And she put them on their shoes, and that worked really well. So maybe there's something there, perhaps. But again,
definitely,
again,
really good idea.
In the sea. Who knows? Everything will end up in the sea.
One thing, in case people are wondering, you know, what about if you put something on there and didn't rely on making a sound, but you kind of tracked him down with like a Bluetooth beacon with GPS? Believe me, that wouldn't be accurate enough.
That's true.
Sister bought this very thing for her guide dog that whenever it was let off in the woods would just head off in a straight line and wouldn't ever come back. So not for the first 45 minutes at the very minimum. So she used that, and it just wasn't accurate enough to find this dog who was snuffling around the place. So I don't think that would be an option. So yeah, I think we're talking a sound-based solution here.
It has to be, yeah. But preferably a sound that the child doesn't want to, as we've said, chuck in the sea. Okay, well, an interesting email. Hope that helps, I think. Right, let's move on. We've got time for a couple more.
So this next one from Andy. Dear Tech Talk team, I refer to the discussion that you had during your program that was broadcast in the middle of July concerning the use of lock dots as a tactile means of identifying certain keys on a laptop. Mm. Do you guys remember this?
I do, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some time ago, I expressed concern over the use of bump dots for this purpose because they were likely to press against the screen with the relevant keys compressed when the lid was closed. The wife of a friend of mine purchased some fabric grips from the online shop beginning with the letter A, which Stephen's a fan of. She uses these for her hobby of quilting. They are soft, circular, and adhesive patches about the size of a small label for a pen friend labeler, but about 1 millimeter thick. So just sufficient to identify particular keys, but obviously not damaging the screen or the keys themselves. So I had a packet of 18, and I think they only cost a couple of quid. They could be an alternative to lock dots, or maybe use a mixture of both if you want more than one tactile means of identifying keys that are close together. Yeah, that suggestion has come from Andy in Somerset.
That's an excellent idea, Andy. Love this. Love this. I feel like I'm listening to the Craft Channel now. You know, these TV channels where they just talk about, you know, I don't know what, I don't understand what they do on these channels, but they seem to just be making cards all the time. I don't know what they're even selling, to be honest, because they're clearly not selling the card.
The channel's selling ads in between. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I love this because, I mean, if people didn't remember that episode, lock is L-O-C space dots, and they were our solution because they're much smaller.
My idea.
Ones.
My idea.
Yeah, sorry. Our communal, the royal we, because that were they were much less proud and they wouldn't, you know, have the issue that was mentioned there. But this is a much more elegant solution still, I think, because it's going to be much nicer to type on a key that's got a nice little felt or kind of fabric circle on it or something, as opposed to typing on a dot of any size. Do you think?
And then you're guaranteed there's not going to damage your laptop. If you spent, I mean, especially something like a Dell XPS laptop, right? What's that, 1,500 quid or something? Maybe 1,000 if you're getting it at a decent price. You know, that's a lot of money to spend on something that you're about to destroy with bump-ons. And especially if it's a touchscreen. You know, if you just power that machine, if you don't power it down and you just close the lid, that machine will still be active. So it could, in theory, reactivate itself with those dots. So, no, you want to take care of your equipment. And this is a good way of doing it. I like that.
So what did Andy call those, Andy?
Oh, they were, what are they called? I've gone past
fabric
the
grips or something.
Fabric grips, yeah. From an online shop beginning with the letter A.
Not Argos. Right, look, we're out of time. But that's it for this week. Thank you so much. Next week, we're going to be discussing Samsung and Google launching some new tech. Yeah, we're looking forward to discussing all of that. Also, Ira at home. Will's back in touch with us to share his experiences of Ira. This time, he's at home and he wants some help in identifying objects. We're going to learn how he uses that. And we'll also get more of your emails as well. As always, you can get in touch with the program, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. UK. You can also find RNIB Connect Radio on Twitter @RNIB Radio. Ask your questions there, #AskTechTalk. If you've got a question you'd like to put forward to us, then put it there. Or, as I say, drop us an email. You'll find us on Facebook as well, RNIB Connect Radio. We're not on TikTok because it's been shut down apparently by Donald Trump. So, well, there you go. Didn't have to bother starting an account. Robin, thank you. Andy, as always, thank you as well.
Thanks,
bye.
Guys.
Catch you again next week.